This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Blagojevich inks a book deal. Governor Sebelius goes to Washington, which leaves a spot in Topeka. Minnesota inches toward a junior senator. Illinois wishes it had. It's Wednesday, and time once again for a visit with a political junkie.
There you go again.
When I hear your new ideas, I'm reminded of that ad. Where's the beef?
Extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
Lipstick.
But I'm the decider.
Political junkie Ken Rudin can't be with us this week. We've invited his podcast partner, Ron Elving, NPR senior Washington editor, to guest pun. As usual, there's a lot to cover. Kentucky Senator Jim Bunny plays a little hardball. Illinois Senator Roland Burris holds on for now. And a congressional primary in Chicago. A bit later, we'll focus on the latest dust-up in the battle for leadership in the Republican Party. Michael Steele, Newt Gingrich, Rush Limbaugh, Mitt Romney. But we begin, as always, with a trivia question. Ron Elving joins us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ron.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And what's the trivia question this week?
The trivia question this week, and I think this is one Ken would be proud of, who was the last United States senator to be expelled from the chamber?
We're talking, some are talking, that Roland Burris might be the next one. Might be. We'll have to see about that. But nevertheless, if you think you know the last senator to be expelled from the U.S. Senate, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And, well, as we mentioned, Senator Burris has been accused of lying both to the Illinois House of Representatives and, well, to the U.S. Senate as well.
Yes, and it's hard to know which is the more serious crime in the minds of United States senators. As you may recall, it wasn't so many weeks ago that after he had been appointed by the notorious and since impeached and removed from office Rod Blagojevich, Mr. Burris went before a committee of the state legislature that was investigating Blagojevich and said he hadn't had any contacts with the governor or the governor's office or the governor's associates having to do with the appointment prior to his having been appointed. He hadn't had any kind of political commerce with them or even discussed having any. It was pretty clear testimony. And on the basis of that, the United States Senate sat him, decided to take him in. And the Democrats, of course, had some, well, more than average
small,
reservations
small
about
dishes
this.
Of crow to eat about that.
Well, that's right, because they had initially said that anyone appointed by the troubled Governor Blagojevich would not be acceptable since he was well known, widely known, to have been conducting an auction for that seat and looking for the highest bidder. So it was only after they'd been assured that Burris did no bidding whatsoever and therefore had totally clean hands that they agreed to seat him. And now, of course, since then, we have learned, in, among other things, an affidavit from Senator Burris, that he had had a number of contacts with Blagojevich's people, including his brother.
And so is this going to result in his ouster?
That is a much more difficult question. He has been urged to resign by many people back in Illinois and also by people here in Washington. The subject of resignation has even been discussed in a knee-to-knee discussion with Dick Durbin, who is the senior senator from Illinois and the number two Democratic leader in the United States Senate. So this has come up. There have been a lot of really uncomfortable conversations. It's clear that the people that he told his hands were clean no longer believe it and would like to see him resign to resolve this matter. The acting governor back in Illinois, who was previously the lieutenant governor, has said that he would prefer to call a special election, which would please both parties and make this a totally open process, leave it up to the people, forget about this whole appointment business. And that would seem to be a good outcome after all the grief everyone's been through. But Senator Burris has said he plans to serve out the term.
We shall see. Anyway, let's go back to the other form of politics in Illinois, the primary election yesterday in Chicago.
Yes. Now, this was made necessary, of course, by Rahm Emanuel, a former congressman, deciding to become chief of staff to Barack Obama. Now, Rahm Emanuel was never an ordinary congressman. He had previously had a very powerful position in the White House of Bill Clinton, had gone to Wall Street, made himself a lot of money in a short period of time, went back to Chicago, got elected to the 5th District seat, very Democratic seat there in the city of Chicago. And Then he became very quickly an important part of the leadership in the House of Representatives and helped the Democratic Party become the majority party there in 2006 as their campaign chairman. He was a critical factor in the Democrats' rise in the mid-decade that led to their current majority. So no great surprise then that Barack Obama sought him out for advice as a political ally there in Illinois and wanted him by his side here in the White House and made him chief of staff. So that vacated this position. Position, which has now been more or less effectively filled by Mike Quigley. And he is a Cook County commissioner, somebody who's been in politics there for 10 years. And the reason I say more or less filled is that these were primaries, and he, as the Democratic nominee, will be the very heavy prohibitive favorite on April 7th.
I'm impressed you did not get to use the word tantamount in that peroration there. Tantamount to election is victory in the Democratic primary, at least in that district. Let's see if we get some answers to our trivia question. And again, this is the last U.S. senator to be, thrown out of the United States Senate. 800-989-8255 if you think you know, or give us a call or send us an email. That's talk@npr.org. And let's go to Rodney. Rodney with us from Lewistown in Montana.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Rodney. Go ahead.
I was just guessing that it was Ted Stevens.
Ted Stevens of Alaska. Well, he's no longer in the United States Senate, Ron.
It's a good guess, but Ted Stevens might very well be described as the last person to have left the Senate in ignominy. But he was not actually expelled and didn't happen to be necessary because the voters of Alaska turned him out very narrowly in a long count back in November and elected a new senator, Mark Begich, to take his place. So Ted Stevens was dismissed by the voters, although he may have been subject to an expulsion process had he not been defeated because of those convictions in federal court.
Good guess, Rodney.
Thank you.
Here's an email. This from Lori. That would be Thomas Dodd, Senator Chris Dodd's father. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. No, excuse me. Bob's from Gales Ferry in Connecticut.
Another good guess because, yes, back in that era, 1960s, Senator Dodd from Connecticut came under a lot of scrutiny because of some of his personal arrangements. That's Thomas Dodd. And he, however, was never expelled. He was censured, and he left the Senate later, again, in disgrace, if you will, certainly in the minds of many. And that is part of the reason why Chris Dodd, the current senator, turned kind of his own life around, became very serious about his own career, and went after a political career, which eventually led him to be a United States senator as well. It was a deep blow to him and to his family, and Senator Dodd, the senior, Thomas Dodd, did not survive that very humiliating experience by many years.
Frank is on the line from, is this Walt Park or Waite Park?
Waite Park.
Waite Park in Minnesota. Go ahead, please.
Was it David Durenberger from Minnesota?
You know, it's interesting. People tend to nominate their own senators.
Because there have been so many.
For this distinction. And Dave Durenberger is another guy who got into some trouble and left the Senate under less than optimum circumstances. But he did not actually go through an expulsion procedure and was not expelled either because in his particular case, he resigned.
Okay. Thanks,
Frank. Here's an email that's from Joe. Was it Claude Rains after he tried to shoot himself in the Senate lobby over the Willard Creek Dam project?
I love that answer. Yes, in the world of Jimmy Stewart and Frank Capra and the world and the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, 1939, it's having its 70th anniversary this year, Claude Rains would seem to be the guy you would want to see expelled from the Senate. But totally fictional.
Michael in Philadelphia suggests Bob Packwood, the senator from Oregon.
Bob Packwood came to within a vote of being expelled. A process was begun and carried out that was extremely painful for the Senate over Bob Packwood's behavior with women. We won't go into a great deal of greater detail on that, but he was on the brink of an expulsion vote when he chose to resign. This is usually what happens when someone is on the brink of expulsion, when everyone's expecting them to be expelled, they step down on their own and resign.
And Mike is on the line from Cape Coral in Florida.
Would it have been Jesse Bright, the Democratic senator from Indiana?
Ah.
Ding, 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 ding.
A historian. Do you actually know a little bit more about this case? Could you tell us when it happened?
Wouldn't it have been, I don't remember if it was 1862 or 3, but wouldn't it have been because of support for Confederate secession?
That is exactly right. It was February of 1862, and he was the last of more than a dozen senators to be expelled over the Civil War, in essence, but he was the only one who was not a Southerner, whose state was not in rebellion against the Union. He was expelled because of his sympathies, well expressed and understood, towards the South. Many people in Indiana did share those.
Mike, congratulations. You win this week's No Prize. And I have to announce you are the last winner of the No Prize to actually not get a No Prize, because starting next week when Ken gets back, we're going to be awarding actual physical No Prizes and mailing them out to people. So thanks very much for the call. And it's a distinction. It's an honor.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mike. We should also note that Jerry in Edmond, Oklahoma, on email had the right answer too. Polk, Johnson, and Bright, all Dems expelled in 1862. But speaking of border state senators giving the brush back to their parties, Jim Bunning, a lot of people, not to put too fine a point on it, wondered if Jim Bunning was all there. He showed this week that he might be.
You know, Jim Bunning is an interesting character in the United States Senate. He's a junior senator from Kentucky. His colleague, Mitch McConnell, is the Senate Republican leader. But Jim Bunning has been colorful, if not quite as powerful, in the Senate. He is, of course, known to most Americans who follow baseball as a Hall of Fame pitcher. A many, many years long career, distinguished career.
Perfect game.
Threw a perfect game and was, to some degree, riding that athletic fame when he got into politics and eventually got elected to the United States Senate. He is nearing the end of his second term. He has had many scrapes with the media, with other senators, with other Republicans. Most recently, most people probably heard his name when he made a remark about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and not being around in the fall. So in reference to her cancer, and he has had to make many apologies, let's put it that way. Most recently, the party has been indicating in Kentucky and in Washington, they would like to see somebody else run for that seat in 2010 instead of Senator Bunning. And he first said he would sue the National Republican Senate
for lack of support.
For lack of support, if they did not raise money for him. And then he said, here's another thing I might do. I could resign right now and let the Democratic governor back in Kentucky appoint a Democrat, and that could get the Democrats to 60 votes and a filibuster-proof majority. What do you think about them apples? At which point the Senate Republican leadership said, Jim, you're our guy.
You're our guy. And it remains to be seen if they could get to 60, depending on what happens in Minnesota, which will be thawed sometime in the next 2 or 3 years. Anyway, Ron Elving is going to stay with us. Again, Ken Rudin, our regular political junkie, is not able to be with us this week. So Ron Elving ably pitching in. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Matt Bai and Jonah Goldberg as we discuss who is the leader of the Republican Party, a question that came up after Rush Limbaugh's address to the Conservative Political Action Committee in D.C. this past weekend. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Every Wednesday, we check in with our political junkie. Today, Ken Rudin is not able to be with us. Pinch hitting Ron Elving, NPR senior Washington editor. He's the hand behind the Watching Washington column on NPR.org. Rush Limbaugh, the conservative talk show host, visited Washington over the weekend. He spoke at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference. In his address, Rush criticized the Obama administration, the Democratic Party, and certain parts of the Republican Party, too. And he criticized the Obama administration and said that President Obama's policies, quote, scare him. He also said he hopes the president fails, and in an address that lasted more than an hour, went on to explain what he meant by that.
Now, I understand, okay, we can't say we want the president to fail. Mr. Limbaugh, that's like saying, this is the voice of the new castrati, by the way, guys that have lost their guts. I want the country to survive as we have known it, as you and I were raised in it, is what I mean. Now, I have been called, and I can take it. Look, pioneers take the arrows. I don't mind what anybody says about me. Anytime, ever, I don't have time for it. I don't give other people the power to offend me, and you shouldn't either, by the wasted time being offended. Don't let... But... I mean, there's some people you can't say that you want the president to fail. Ladies and gentlemen of the United States, the Democrat Party has actively not just sought the failure of Republican presidents and policies and now wars for the first time. The Democrat Party doesn't stop at failure. Talk to Judge Robert Bork. Talk to Justice Clarence Thomas about how they try to destroy lives, reputations, and character. And I'm supposed to say, I don't want the president to fail. We are in for a real battle. We are talking about the United States of America, and there will always be an America, don't misunderstand, but we're talking about it remaining the country we were all born into and reared and grown into. And it's under assault. It's always under assault, but it's never been under assault like this from within before. And it's a serious, serious battle.
Talk show host Rush Limbaugh speaking at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, last weekend. Afterwards, Michael Steele, the chairman of the Republican National Committee, criticized Limbaugh as, on occasion, inflammatory and ugly. That brought an angry response from Limbaugh and an apology later from Michael Steele. And Democrats leapt on the controversy. Here is Rahm Emanuel, President Obama's chief of staff, speaking on CBS TV's Face the Nation.
He's asked for President Obama and called for President Obama to fail. That's his view, and that's what he's enunciated. And whenever a Republican criticizes him, they have to run back and apologize to him and say they were misunderstood. He is the voice and the intellectual force and energy behind the Republican Party, and he has been upfront about what he views and hasn't stepped back from that.
So, Republican listeners today, who is the leader of the Republican Party? Is it Rush Limbaugh? Is it Michael Steele? Is it Newt Gingrich? Is it, Mitt Romney, who we all forget won the straw poll at that CPAC conference over the weekend? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. And joining us here in Studio 3A are Matt Bai, the author of The Argument, Inside the Battle to Remake Democratic Politics, and a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine. His latest piece is called Newt Again. Matt, nice to have you back.
Always good to be here, Neil.
And Jonah Goldberg, editor-at-large for the National Review Online and a columnist for the Los Angeles Times. You can find his article called The Tired War on Rush Limbaugh and Matt Bai's piece as well at npr.org/talk. He's also with us here in Studio 3A. Nice to have you back on the show.
Great to be here, Neil.
And did either of you think that, well, Matt, clearly you thought Newt Gingrich was going to be the big news out of the weekend.
Are we doing straw polls again? Can we stop with the straw polls? How can they do that already? I don't think Newt Gingrich is going to be the big news. I do think he's very, very important behind the scenes, and it's important to understand the role he's playing. But this moment, you know, that you're talking about with Rush Limbaugh and still reminds me very much, and I talked about this in relation to Gingrich, very much of what happened in Democratic politics after the 2004 election, where you had this activist base of the party screaming to be more confrontational, to give more voice to anger, to stand up and not shrink from the principles of the party, and you had a Washington establishment or a leadership of the party that was trying to feel its way through how to broaden its appeal, right? How to reach more people, because those two things are so often in conflict. And I think Republicans and conservatives, movement conservatives, are now going through much that same process.
What do you think?
I think that this is, as my article implied, a very tired and familiar place that we're in right now. Democrats have tried to do this with Rush Limbaugh before. Bill Clinton tried to demonize Rush Limbaugh in the early 1990s as the sort of the origins of the Oklahoma City bombing. Tom Daschle tried to do it in the early 2000s. And the Democrats have, you know, there was a piece in the Politico just today by my friend Jonathan Martin where he makes it clear that this was a coordinated strategy where the Democrats are very eager to have a replacement for George Bush or Tom DeLay or another. They want a convenient demon. And Rush Limbaugh is it for them, and it's a very useful sort of stand-in and straw man for the arguments they want to make. I salute them because tactically I think it's brilliant, but I think a lot of the arguments about this stuff are really sort of silly season stuff. And I don't think that Rush Limbaugh is necessarily the leader of the Republican Party. He doesn't say he's the leader of the Republican Party. I don't think, alas, the Republican Party or the conservative movement really has a single leader right now because it does have some real problems.
Tactically, you admit brilliant. And Rush Limbaugh, didn't he seem to step into that role when he says, I want President Obama to fail, his policies to fail. Had a Democrat said that about George W. Bush, he would have been pilloried as unpatriotic.
I'm kind of flummoxed by this whole idea that it's unpatriotic to say. It depends on what you want someone to fail at. I mean, wars, I always thought, had a very specific and maybe unique role in public affairs as special things that the country is supposed to rally around. I didn't think anybody was unpatriotic for saying that they hoped George Bush would fail with his Social Security privatization plan. I think that was a perfectly legitimate ideological fight in this country. George Bush lost because he handled it very badly, I thought. And I, as a conservative, I don't need Rush Limbaugh to tell me to hope to that Barack Obama fails in turning America into a sort of social democratic European welfare state. I want him to fail at that, too. And I don't think it's unpatriotic for me to hope that he fails at that. Because I think it's just simple. Whatever happened to this idea? You know, if Republicans are being hypocritical in some way here, whatever happened to this idea that I read on a lot of bumper stickers over the last 8 years that dissent is the highest form of patriotism? All of a sudden, Rush Limbaugh, according to an enormous chorus of people on the left, is unpatriotic for saying that he doesn't want Barack Obama's schemes to succeed, when they used to say that dissent on something like the war was the highest form of patriotism.
Well, it seems dissent within the Republican Party is disloyal to Rush Limbaugh and can get you 20 minutes of excoriation on national radio. Matt Bai, is this a silly season thing? Is this going to pass in a couple of weeks?
Yes, but the underlying tensions are not. I mean, sure, and you saw this in Democratic politics when they were lost after that 2004 election. There are little flare-ups like this that come and go away, and Rush Limbaugh's kind of a distraction. He's neither serving in government. He's not setting the agenda. He has a certain following. I don't think it's going to dominate American politics anytime soon. He's not the leader of the Republican Party. I agree it's a pretty good strategy. Any more than MoveOn is the head of the Democratic Party when Republicans were yelling about them for weeks at a time. But these underlying tensions, you know, the idea of what this party is going to be about and whether it is going to try to broaden its appeal beyond traditional base groups, or whether it needs to reevaluate its pitch, whether it needs to simply retrench and get back to principles that guided the party during the years of Reagan and Gingrich and Bush. I mean, this is a tension and a question that's going to have to be settled over a period of time. And I think Michael Steele being at the RNC is not exactly helping to resolve this issue, because he doesn't seem to know what the job as chairman of the RNC actually is.
I do want to say, just as a conservative, I think Matt's absolutely right about this. In many ways, this is a stalking horse debate where Rush Limbaugh is standing in for a sizable and serious group of conservatives who say we need to stick true to our principles. We have to stick true to our philosophy of limited government. And then there's another group of conservatives who I do think are honest to goodness conservatives. I don't want to read them out of any movement, who say, no, we have to update with the times. We need to change our focus and all of the rest. And because those conservatives don't have the megaphone that Rush Limbaugh does, they sometimes get shrill in their complaining about Limbaugh. But it's a perfectly legitimate debate. I come down on both sides on it, depending on the issue.
Okay. Let's see if we get some listeners in on the conversation. 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Let's start with Lee. Lee with us from Williamsburg, Virginia.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I'm actually a registered independent. I feel Mitt Romney, you mentioned, he's a little too progressive for, you know, the base of the party, although I would vote for the man for president. It seems to me that the principles that go back to Ronald Reagan, possibly best represented in somebody like Eric Cantor of Virginia, although he's not in a position of leadership at this time. But I think, and of course, what I've heard you talk about already, they seem to have lost their soul. The years with Rove in charge and Bush as president, with all the spending, government grew, the Christian conservatives, it all kind of sounds empty now. And they really need to find their soul again. They need to find their center, which, you know, all we're hearing is from Rush, which he's definitely not the center.
Ron Elving, we did note earlier that Mitt Romney did win the straw poll that they held at the CPAC conference. We should also note that it's the third year in a row he's won it, and he's yet to be the Republican candidate for president.
That's right, although he was in some sense the runner-up in 2008. He was in some sense the person who was the biggest threat to the eventual nominee, John McCain, and there were some special circumstances that probably held him back and kept him from getting that nomination. I certainly would not want to bet against him being the nominee in 2012 or 2016. I think he's got another shot. I think he's got another time around coming, and it's not just because he won this straw poll in CPAC, but because he did that and because he is being listened to by a certain number number of people, much more quietly. Not the Rush Limbaugh style and not the I'm going to be on every talk show style. In fact, you haven't been seeing him out there very much in comparison to some of these other putative heads of the Republican Party. He's talking quietly to the people who really do have responsibility for carrying forward the Republican standard, even in exile, even in the minority, both in Congress, House and Senate, and also among the governors. He's in touch with these people. He's talking to the serious people. A lot of the rest of this is in the world of entertainment. Yes, political entertainment. Yes, it's significant. Yes, it has an effect on elections. But in the world of actual governing and leadership, Mitt Romney is moving in that world.
Well, here on public radio, of course, we'd never stoop to entertainment. But Lee, thank you very much for the phone call. That's Ron Elving, who's sitting in today for political junkie Ken Rudin. Also with us, Matt Bai for the New York Times Magazine. And, of course, Jonah Goldberg, who's the editor-at-large for the National Review Online. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Van. Van with us from Wichita.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I think Rush Limbaugh, he's not the leader of anything. He's a opportunist with a loud mouth.
Well, he's the leader in talk radio hosts. He
well,
makes
yeah,
the most
okay,
money.
Well,
he's got the biggest audience.
I'll give him talk radio.
Are you hoping he fails? Voice.
Yes.
You know, what the Republican Party really needs is a cross between somebody such as Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney. I mean, and I think the problem is you don't have that person. I'm a Republican, and to be totally honest with you, I voted for Obama because I don't see even what we stand for anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be we were conservative, we were fiscally responsible, and that's apparently not the case anymore. So I don't know, but I don't think it's some talk show loudmouth as being the head of the Republican Party. It just the Democrats are giving him power by attacking him. I mean, that's what's going to make him more than he is.
Van, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate
Thank
it. Jonah Goldberg, Rush Limbaugh is not known for temperate criticism. Mm-hmm. And again, is his tone right? Is he right for the party at this moment, that kind of red meat speech that he made at CPAC over the weekend?
Well, I mean, I think there's absolutely a role in a political movement for bucking up the morale and firing up the troops, particularly at something like CPAC, which really is a very tight-knit, red-meat, conservative bunch of people.
Meeting of true believers.
And, you know, this moment, even though I think there are enormous differences between the men, this moment kind of reminds me a little bit, in terms of a double standard, with when Matt was talking about the Democratic Party in 2004. The Democratic Party in 2004 had an interesting relationship with Michael Moore. Michael Moore sat in Jimmy Carter's box at the Democratic Convention when they screened his, what I think is not my favorite movie, in Washington. The entire Democratic leadership came and attended the screening and hugged him and whatnot. And we didn't hear this kind of hand-wringing about, you know, is Michael Moore the head of the Democratic Party back then? I think Rush Limbaugh is an important voice. Maybe his tone is wrong for winning converts over to the Republican Party. But at this point, the Republican Party is completely out of power. We can't do – the Republican Party, conservatives can't really do anything. And it is really up to Barack Obama and the Democrats to govern right now. And so if Rush Limbaugh has a role sort of in terms of being a cheerleader for the troops and keeping people true to their principles, I'm not sure that's an entirely unhealthy thing.
Let's see if we can go to Heather. Heather with us from Newport News in Virginia.
Hi. I am a Republican, and I actually did not vote for Barack Obama. But – I certainly don't think Rush Limbaugh is the leader of the Republican Party. I think it's important that the Republican Party remember that it's the people who are members of the Republican Party who are the leaders of the party. I think that it's time to remember that the people who pay their taxes and the people who pay for their own health insurance and who take care of their families and do responsible things to move the country along are the leaders of the Republican Party, certainly not a celebrity like Rush Limbaugh, and he is a celebrity. To say Rush Limbaugh is the leader of the Republican Party is like saying Sean Penn is the leader of the Democratic Party. It's just absurd.
Well, how did you – how did
a celebrity.
But what did you – how did you react to what Jonah said about sometimes the party faithful need to be shored up, you know, with a rousing speech?
It was an exciting speech, and yeah, sure, people got all excited because throwing slime around is always exciting for some people. But it's just, it's just hoopla. It's almost not even intelligent. Who wants the president to fail in all reality? Personally, I didn't vote for him, but I'm crossing my fingers, and I'm hoping that maybe he knows something more than what I learned in economics, and it'll all work out, and next thing you know, we'll be living in a utopia, and he is the messiah that everybody thinks he is.
Utopia, that's a parkway in Queens. Heather, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're going to continue this conversation with NPR's Ron Elving, with Matt Bai and Jonah Goldberg. Who's the leader of the Republican Party after the dust-up over the weekend between Michael Skeel and Rush Limbaugh? 800-989-8255. And email us, talk@npr.org. We'll also be looking into a commission on truth that the Senate Judiciary Committee talked about today. More on that later. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land. In a few minutes, we'll get to the Truth Commission that was discussed before a Senate committee today. But let's continue our conversation on who's the leader of the Republican Party. Ron Elving is still with us, NPR senior Washington editor and our political junkie today, as Ken Rudin is not able to be with us. He'll return next Wednesday. Our guests are Matt Bai, contributing writer for The New York Times Magazine. His article, Newt Again, ran in the February 25th edition. And Jonah Goldberg, editor-at-large for the National Review Online. He wrote a column titled The Tired War on Rush Limbaugh for the Los Angeles Times. Matt, how does this process work out? How does a party out of power, as the Democrats were, as you described in 94, arrive at a decision about a new leader of the party? Does it have to revolve around a presidential campaign?
Well, if you're the Democrats, you just wait for your opposition to completely implode. and that happened right on schedule. It does generally fall to a presidential campaign to settle the question of leadership. The question of vision is something different, perhaps. And occasionally that's settled on a presidential level, too. But, people will arise as they begin to look at presidential campaigns. But this question of what kind of party you want to have, who it appeals to, should it be more about working class voters? Should it be more about immigrants? Or should it be more about social conservatives or the wealthy, as it's been?
How do you reach out to Latinos and to African Americans?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a sort of long, messy process for which the factions are just beginning to sort of, flesh themselves out at this point. Remember, we are, just a flash of a second past this last campaign. I mean, things are really in a very inchoate phase for conservatives right now.
Let's get Kent on the line. Kent with us from Royal Oaks in Michigan.
Yeah, hello. I was a straight Republican voter for 20 years up until through the 2000 election, and more recently have been voting more independently. And I think that the Republican Party up until that point has really lost its way in the past 8 years. You know, I was a huge fan of Ronald Reagan, and I think the party has lost its way by concentrating on social issues and getting into people's personal lives and private lives in a way that, you know, the old Republican Party was, you know, all about, you know, getting the government out of people's personal lives and concentrating on protecting the economy. And, you know, we had a president who took over a government that had a record surplus, wasted the money. All the money disappeared. We, you know, wasted huge amounts of money on these wars overseas, which made us incredibly unpopular, did nothing to protect the economy, and as a great Republican said, as far as presidential election goes, it's the economy, stupid. And an economy that's so poorly, it was performing so poorly, of course the party power is going to drop like a stone.
Jonah Goldberg, the Democratic Party suffered for a long period of time waiting for the next Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Is the Republican Party going to suffer waiting for the next Ronald Reagan?
I think it may.
Go ahead, Jonah.
It might. One of my favorite lines is from Ed Koch when he lost his reelection campaign, former mayor of New York City. And they asked him, are you ever going to run again? He said, no. The people of New York fired me, and now they must be punished. I think that... Edmund Burke said that mankind will learn at the school of example and none other. And right now, it's all about Barack Obama. If these policies succeed, if as an earlier caller said, he's able to defy everything I know about economics, everything I think I believe about economics, and make all of this happen, bring us to the sunny uplands of history and buy us all a Coke, then the Republicans are going to be in real trouble for a very long time, unless they become a Me Too party. But if all of this fails, if the Democrats implode, just like the Republicans imploded, then voters will say, well, we gave them a shot. They said they weren't about big government anymore. They weren't about LBJ-style liberalism. They lied. And now look at the mess we're in. Let's go back and give the Republicans another try.
Matt?
You know, Neil, this is interesting to me. Just hearing Johnny talk about it reminded me. I mean, to me, the Republican Party right now is like a, an ammunition metaphor, right? It's like a single-shot rifle mounted with one bullet in the chamber. It can only point straight ahead. It can't go side to side. It has one shot left. All it knows, the only power it has is in big government spending and taxation. And for some reason, Democrats in the last several weeks have seemed intent on standing right in front of it. I mean, this is a party that should really have no chance in 2010, that really has no control over the agenda right now. But this issue of this stimulus bill, this over $1 trillion in spending with the stimulus and the bailouts, combined with now taxation, you can say you're only taxing certain people, but as George W. Bush proved again and again, people don't generally make distinctions if you're raising their taxes or someone else's. Taxes are taxes. They've set for themselves, now the Democrats have set for themselves a challenge, and I think conservatives have taken hope in the last couple of weeks. That's what's worked in the past can work again.
And Ron Elving, the president can be criticized for a lot of things. Lack of ambition, not one of them. As Matt Bai has said, he has endorsed a vast and overarching series of programs to remake the country.
That's right. This week it's health care. We're having a health care summit tomorrow. Soon there will be an energy summit, and I don't doubt an environment summit at the White House before the spring is out. Previous to that, we had a fiscal responsibility summit, and we also had the overhauling of the entire financial industry, and we have this stimulus package that Matt's already described that could not get much more ambitious, the obvious model being the 1933-100 days of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, that many people regarded as a signal failure from the standpoint of economics, but which seemed to, in some sense or another, capture the imagination of the people, at least in that time. And the Democrats were fairly successful, politically speaking at least, throughout the rest of the 30s and most all of the 40s. So there's another danger here for Republicans, and that is that even if there is primarily failure from what comes from the Obama administration, you could see a replay of the capturing of the imagination of the swing voter by an image of bold experimentation, insistent, persistent experimentation, as Roosevelt described it. And if that works for Barack Obama, huge if, of course. It was pretty much unprecedented when Franklin Roosevelt did it, and there have been no other analogs. So if somehow that were to happen for Barack Obama, that would be bad news as well for the Republican Party.
Well, we'll resume the conversation in the next 100 days, perhaps, when all of this is settled and after the crisis is over. Jonah Goldberg, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jonah Goldberg is editor-at-large for the National Review Online and a columnist for the Los Angeles Times. Matt Bai, also with us here today in Studio 3A. Matt, as always, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
Matt Bai, a contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine. Newt, again, his most recent piece, and he's the author of The Argument, Inside the Battle to Remake Democratic Politics. And our guest political junkie this week, Ron Elving, NPR senior Washington editor. As always, Ron, thanks very much.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And Ken Rudin will join us again next week, and we can announce the great new No Prize, so stay with us.